Hi, I'm Phil Palucha from Billionaires in Boxers, and you are about to enjoy an interview hosted by one of our guest hosts, Andrew Tallant. Enjoy.
Hello, and welcome to Confessions of a Successful Leader, hosted by me, Andrew Tallant, the self-coaching expert. In each episode of the show, we hear the insightful confessions of a successful leader who wants to inspire others to live their professional and personal dreams. I am always keen to hear your feedback, particularly in relation to the kinds of leaders you would like me to invite onto the show in future. But for now, sit back, relax, and enjoy the rich insights from our special guest. Hello and welcome to another episode of Confessions of a Successful Leader, hosted by me, Andrew Tallant, the self-coaching expert. In each episode of the show, we hear the insightful confessions of a successful leader who wants to inspire others to live their professional and personal dreams. This week, I'm delighted that Laura Igwe has joined us in the studio. Laura is an auditor and cybersecurity specialist who recently ventured into entrepreneurship after discovering the benefits of Web3 technology for many businesses. She is now running a new voice networking app called Carrero, a social app on a social mission to tackle the pandemic of superficiality. Laura, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Yeah, it's lovely to see you. And I always like the audience to really understand who it is that they're, you know, hearing from today. So just tell us a little bit about yourself, your background and your current focus.
Okay, sure. So I'm trying to align my personal mission with my work mission as well at the moment, to really move into a space where I not only love what I do, but I feel like what I'm working on is going to make a real impact in the world. And it's very exciting to be becoming an entrepreneur, to be stepping out there and to be trying to drive a real social mission that will hopefully have a very positive impact on the world around us and is sort of in line with what I feel I was born to do. So that's sort of where I'm at the moment. When I was younger, ever since I can remember, I've always been this kind of nurturing person that the most important thing to me ever since I was a child has been building deep relationships with the people around me and trying to build strong, deep relationships and communities. That's always been the number one thing for me in my life. And I noticed around the time that social media came out that suddenly became a little bit harder to do, especially with the kind of the friendship groups I was in school. And as Facebook and other social media platforms came out, it sort of changed the way people interacted with each other. It made things a little bit more superficial in the decisions that people were starting to make, and people not always making decisions that would benefit them in the long run, benefit them with building stronger relationships and communities. And instead they were prioritizing what was going to get them more followers or friends on Facebook. And that's really always stuck with me. And just the rise in polarization that we see at the moment in social media, the division, the extremism, the negativity that social media has driven and made worse. It's contributing to this pandemic of not only superficiality, but a real pandemic of isolation as well, loneliness, all the mental health crisis that we are experiencing at the moment. And so I really made it my mission when I discovered Web3 technology and how that can help improve business models, improve the way that we interact on the internet, and help businesses to focus on the customers more. I then realized that it was my passion and purpose to move into the social media space and try and build a better social media platform that actually cares about their customers' well-being, their mental health, like a social platform on a social mission, because I can't really say the same about too many of the big social platforms out there at the moment. I don't think any of them are really clearly on any kind of mission to help improve the mental health or improve our social well-being as it is. So that's my current mission and a bit of background about why I personally care. Yeah.
Thank you. And I hear the passion coming through, and we'll go into more about, you know, how that, you know, manifests in terms of your business and how that's going to develop over the years. But just take us back to, I was really interested in what you said there, that from a young age, you can remember really the importance of deep relationships, which, you know, some people out there won't be able to relate to. They're not afforded sometimes that love and that depth in relationships. So what was it about your family system or the system around you at that time, do you think that meant you felt that?
That's a very interesting question. It could be to do with the fact that we moved house a lot. So my close family relationships became even more important because that was what we had when we moved house. We were moving between Ireland and England and then Manchester and Northumberland and moving around. We even spent, I think, a year in America, but I was a baby. I don't really remember that. I think that played into it. My parents were very loving. They did their best. You know, there was always times when I felt that there was more of a disconnect between my parents and I always felt troubled by that at times. It wasn't all the time, but it was just at times. And maybe if I didn't have other people that I could go to because we were isolated at that time, maybe we just moved house, then I really felt that disconnect with my parents even more. We didn't have extended family around us all the time like some people do, things like that. So, and if I just moved away from friends, then I guess that could have been why.
Sure. And if we then move into your earlier leadership experiences, obviously you're now, you know, an entrepreneur and you've got this mission and purpose. It's very clear. Everyone can hear that. Just tell us a little bit about how your early years maybe shaped you as a leader to begin with. And what did you learn about maybe what you had to change about that? Because maybe some of that necessarily wasn't in service of growing a business.
Absolutely. So I think in my life, the leaders that I've looked up to, definitely my parents were my leaders when I was very young. And then when I moved into corporate, I had experiences with different leaders when I was trying to be self-sufficient, and my future really depended on how I interacted with those leaders in the corporate space. In my childhood, definitely I saw, my dad as a strong male figure, leader in the household. And at times things were brilliant, but then suddenly sometimes the house would be turned upside down because he would come home from work very, very stressed, a bit of a temper. Maybe he'd had a terrible day. He was a doctor, a surgeon, and sometimes he had to deal with patients dying. Sometimes that was because the NHS leaders he was working with were making bad decisions. Some of the leaders in the NHS were not necessarily medically trained, and they were making decisions that weren't always in the best interest of the doctors and the patients. And he used to be quite stressed about things like that, because some of the bad decisions made above him could have meant that his patients died because they couldn't get treated in time. He was pushing for them to have an operation, but the system didn't allow him to do the operation in time or something like that. So he would come home quite stressed and sometimes unable to express why he was angry or stressed. And then that would be taken out on the wife and the children in the house, instead of him maybe coming to us and explaining to his wife and children why he was going to be a little bit sad that evening or angry or stressed that evening. And I feel that would have really helped. So I learned from a young age what to not do as a leader, and trying to not take out your stresses on other people. Sure. And I've tried to avoid that in my own leadership style. I try not to get overstressed myself, but sometimes it's unavoidable. The other thing I saw my parents do was overworking. So working many long hours to try and maybe overcompensate for some of the stresses that they're going through. And I think that's my biggest struggle even now, is that feeling like if I don't overwork, maybe I won't survive, you know, kind of that. It was sort of, especially in my father, you could see that when things got stressful, he would just work and work and work. And then that sense of maybe he can fix it by overworking. But a lot of the times, sometimes overworking doesn't fix things. It can even make things worse because you're not getting enough sleep, you're not looking after yourself, and you can't perform if you're not looking after your own well-being and your own health. And you're not going to make very sensible decisions if you're not looking after your well-being and your health. You might be working hard, but not working very smart.
Yeah, I understand that. And I see a lot of leaders who relate to that, and they've seen in their system, both in family and maybe early work systems, this almost norm of working really long hours and that being almost rewarded and honored and celebrated. And as you say, sometimes it's difficult to break out of that cycle. Yes. Around it. Thank you. And what is it you think from your earlier experiences that you're finding now as a leader has become your superpower? You know, what's the thing that is there for you that almost just flows naturally for you?
Well, okay. I think one thing I do well is trying to protect the people underneath me. I don't do it perfectly, but I do try and make sure that I'm not putting pressure on people underneath me. I'm not bringing negativity into this space. My superpower as a leader is probably bringing freedom to the people in my team, freedom to make their own decisions, freedom to use their time how they want. This is one thing that's been very important to me, to allow people to be themselves and bring out the best in themselves. And probably the thing that I don't do as well is making sure that I can spot if someone is pushing themselves to overwork, because I would never push anyone in my team to overwork. But I've noticed that sometimes they also have that struggle within themselves before I came along. Well, sometimes I struggle with it. Sometimes they see me overworking and they naturally try and copy that. And so that's my weakness, is trying to spot that and help them to, because they might be putting on a brave face and making it look like it's easy, but then time will tell that actually this person has been neglecting their sleep, they haven't been taking care of themselves. And it's really about trying, that's what I'm trying to do now, is trying to be a little bit more observant, to talk to people, get them to open up a bit more, and really support everyone in the team, because everyone's different, everyone will have different work styles. And so I enjoy doing that as well, trying to understand a little bit more about people's lives and what works for them, and work together as a team in that way. And we all have different strengths as well. So that's one thing that I think is a superpower as well, is trying to bring out the strengths of individual people and not just have job descriptions that are so set in stone, because when you bring someone in, they might have something really unique to offer to that, to their work. And it might not be, you know, something that falls in line with the exact job description that a leader may have thought of, but they may have extra value to add. And it's sort of giving the freedom for people to bring out of themselves the real value that they have to bring to the table.
Thank you. And what I'm very aware of now in terms of where you are on your leadership journey, you're very ambitious. You want to be making a difference and an impact in the world, very passionate about what you do. And you're also self-aware how, when your business grows, your leadership style is going to be challenged because of the number of people that you'll be affecting, the number of people you'll be having to manage in terms of stakeholders. So have you thought about how you're going to have to adapt your leadership style as you grow the business? What are you going to have to do differently, do you think?
I probably haven't put enough thought into it because things are moving too fast, but it's a very good time. It's a very good question to take a moment to think, because right now I have a team of 9 of us. I think it's 8 full-time, 1 part-time member, and 1 lady is on maternity as well. And so that was my first experience of managing, supporting someone whilst they're having a child in the workplace. So that was a great experience. She's now 6 weeks after having the baby, and she's still in contact with us so that we don't lose that contact, but she's not back to work yet at this point. But there's definitely going to be more of those type of things to manage as the team grows. At the moment, I have the blessing of being able to have one-to-ones with everyone, but I won't have that as the team grows. and that will be definitely difficult. It'll be probably mean that I'll spend more time with the product managers or the team leads of each division and helping them to also grow and learn more about themselves, learn more about the people that they're working with, and making sure that, it's going to be very hard. And I think it's going to help to be more vocal and tell more stories about leadership. This type of thing will definitely help as well. This type of podcast to share with new people in the team and share the vision of the type of leadership and the type of self-reflection that leaders need to make on themselves and to help the people below them. That's definitely going to be important. But also one thing I have actually thought about, which is a good thing, is that I'm very keen to have great, I don't know if you call it whistleblowing or reporting, to have great access for anyone to go straight to the top. Because my experience in corporate, it was quite difficult if you were struggling with a manager to raise a grievance or to raise a problem, because you don't necessarily want to shake things up. You don't want to cause any problems. But sometimes the process of raising a grievance is not an easy thing. If you are struggling with something with your direct line manager, it's sometimes quite difficult to go higher than that. But I would make it possible for anyone in the company to go straight to the top if they have any concerns or any issues with their mental health that the leadership are making difficult for them. It's not something I want people to be afraid to talk about. Especially if you catch it early, then it's going to be easier to address, rather than maybe somebody's been suffering under a leader for a year or two, and then at that point it's very, very, very raw and difficult, and a lot of trauma may have, you know, been caused, and it's even more difficult to address. So to me, that I think is one positive thing that's very important. Just a culture of
And Laura, what I love about
when people do report that they know.
Yeah.
Sorry, the delay. Yeah, when people do report something, they should know that it's not going to be looked down upon. It's going to be taken seriously. We're not going to just fire their manager. You know, it doesn't have to be a scary thing. It doesn't have to be like that. It's just that a culture of talking about things more. I don't know how to really achieve it, but that's definitely one thing that I think is very important.
Yeah, and what I love about what you're creating in the business, which is unusual, by the way, in my experience of working with many leaders, is I can already feel there's quite a lot of spaciousness in your organization. And I can feel that that's what you want to be able to maintain as you go forward. So there's room for that depth of relationship. What I find is that as businesses grow and leaders become more under pressure and there's more things to do and more decisions to make, sometimes we can actually maybe lose sight of how that spaciousness needs to be maintained. So maybe you can tell us in the future, if things start to feel a little bit more challenging and maybe there's more negative thoughts and energy that come into the business outside of your control, what are your strategies to keep those saboteurs at bay? How do you keep a positive outlook?
I think definitely it helps to be bringing in strong leaders. So if we're employing someone that's going to be in a leadership position, to think carefully about that person. Is that person looking after themselves and their own well-being? Is that person someone that has the mental capacity to care more about the people underneath them and to bring out the best in the people underneath them? So getting it right at the recruitment stage is going to definitely be a big thing, because it's quite hard to sometimes change people. If somebody is suffering from a poor leadership style, it could be because of some past trauma or some health condition sometimes. So sometimes it's very difficult to change people, but if they're in a leadership position, obviously there's things we can do to mitigate and help people improve their leadership style, but the starting point still has to be, as good as possible. And the other thing we can do is look to change the leaders as well, so we can move people around in the team if we find that someone has shown that they have more of a natural capability for leadership. If there's someone that isn't able to carry that through, we can look to do that. And then just supporting people, really. But again, it's sort of finding that balance between what can we actually change and what can we, what's beyond our control. And then if it's beyond our control to help someone change the way they're leading, then we need to look to mitigate that rather than fighting a losing battle.
Thank you. And but I'm also interested in, because you talked about that personal well-being. Yeah, no, and we do. We're always learning these things. But I'm also interested, bearing in mind, again, the sort of family system that you're in. What do you do, or what do you plan to do in the future to make sure you create that space for you as a leader, so you have good quality thinking time, good quality time to really just be present with the decisions that you need to make? How are you going to make sure that you do that rather than just work so hard doing the things that need to get done every day?
Yeah, this is still my biggest weakness. I'm still working on trying to make sure that I'm taking enough care of my physical health. I'm trying to improve the exercise that I do. I'm still not doing enough exercise. I'm getting a lot more sleep now. So I'm working on things one at a time, because in the corporate life, I took some unhealthy habits from my childhood with the overworking, and it was made worse in the corporate life in London because some of the leaders were working even harder than that, and they were very, very stressed. And I was trying to combat that, but some leaders even expect you to be stressed because they're stressed. And it put even more pressure on me to build up unhealthy habits. I wasn't sleeping enough because I was working on reports in the evening, doing audit reports. Then I'd be commuting a lot in the mornings, and in the evenings I'd be working again, working on the weekends. So that sort of, when I was thrown into corporate, it was very, very intense, and really trying to push myself, trying to impress the leaders all the time. And I still have some of that in me. But as I say, over the past few years, I've been trying to get a lot more sleep. I think now that I'm a mother as well, I'm a new mother of two young toddlers, that has also made me realize the importance of sleep even more, because if I don't get enough sleep, I struggle to be present as I would like to with the kids. I struggle to care for the kids in the way that that would be best. So, but I definitely need to work on the exercise side. And one thing I do try and do is make sure that as a leader, I'm always thinking both about the long-term and the short-term goals, going into the detail about what we're working on, but also looking at that strategic long-term side of things and coming in and out regularly, because if you get too bogged down in the detail, you'll not make very sensible long-term decisions. At the same time, if you're always in the strategic side, you're not going to be that much help to some of the challenges that the team are going through, and you're going to miss some of the important details. So it's trying to have that space and trying to encourage other people in the team to also do that. So some people in the team are very good at looking at the long term, and some people are more good at looking at the detail. And it's trying to help, especially the leaders in the team, to find that balance. And that helps to take time out from work as well, because to come out of the detail, take a moment to breathe, go for a walk, you know, do some visionary thinking, and go for a jog. I should go for a jog. I should do that more. Do my visionary thinking whilst I'm jogging. That's what I should do. that does help. Prioritizing food, eating healthily, cooking, taking the time to cook. Simple things, but I've struggled with them because of all this pressure, especially in London. I think there's the corporate culture in London can be so overwhelming and intense, and everyone's pushing themselves in a very unhealthy way. because when we're so stressed out, we can't always make good decisions for the companies that we work for. We can't make sensible decisions, and we can't even we can't even avoid too many small mistakes, silly mistakes, because we're too stressed out. So it's just so important that we remember this. And so, yes, it's a learning process.
Thank you. And what I love about the story that you're telling, Laura, is that you had something that was deep rooted in you in your childhood, which you had a passion for the depth of relationships. And then you had obviously education and a corporate life, which was being fed by, you know, obviously how your parents had worked. And then you made a choice, which was driven obviously in terms of what you couldn't relate to in the way that people were not having the depth of relationship in terms of the superficiality, and you've done something about it. So it's really inspirational for people out there to know that you can reconnect with those dreams that you had as a child and the way that you felt as a child. So bearing that in mind, for the audience that are watching and listening to this today, what advice would you offer to leaders out there who can relate to this, it resonates in some way, of how they can channel those earlier experiences, those earlier thoughts into sustainable leadership or even setting their own business? What advice would you give to them?
Absolutely. I think that would be amazing to be able to inspire other people to follow their dreams and to follow their passions, because especially if you struggle like I did with the stress of just getting through the week or the month, it's very hard to go back to what do I really want in life and take a moment for yourself. And you're not going to die if you don't push yourself that week. You know, even if your finances are not, you know, in a great state, you're not going to suddenly become bankrupt in a week or so just because you're having a dream or you're trying something new. So definitely giving yourself the time to dream is probably the first step. Even if you're under pressure in life, it's still giving yourself that time to just think, is there a better way? Is there a way out? And thinking of different ways you can go after your dreams and go after your goals. And for me, that was, It was after I'd become really passionate about blockchain and Web3, and I realized that becoming an entrepreneur in the Web3 space is going to open up so many more opportunities. For some people, that might be because AI is opening up opportunities. It might not even be that. I mean, for me, I needed that excuse that, okay, Web3 is coming out, let's use that as an excuse to be an entrepreneur. But really, I could have gone after something. I could have tried to become an entrepreneur earlier, but I think I didn't realize that that was open to me. I thought that being an entrepreneur, you had to have, you know, maybe parents that were super rich and they were going to give you money to start your own business. I didn't know that there were incubator programs out there that can help you start a business. And there's quite a few incubators out there nowadays. And I think there's one called Help Bank that I've seen recently, a fantastic guy that's been going viral on LinkedIn and Instagram. Then he's helping young people to go after their dreams and start their businesses. And there's a lot more of these types of opportunities out there than you realize. And once you start to tap into what you really care about in life, once you start to learn more about yourself, you'll find it easier, because when you remember what drives you and what you're passionate about, and you may have hidden it, you may have tried to hide it under the sand or push that thought away because you thought it was impossible, you thought it was too big, too unachievable, or you're thinking, okay, let me just make some money first, save some money, and then I'll go after my dreams. But sometimes that's not always possible. It will take you longer, and there are people out there that you can go to with your business idea, and they'll help you get it set up. They might give you £10,000 to come on their incubator. They might give you £2,000 just to go and start something new. So there is opportunities out there, and there are ways that you can go after it yourself if it's a smaller business that you don't necessarily need that much funding. It's definitely important to reflect on what you really want out of life and the impact that you really want to make Is there an impact that you've always wished that you could make, but you thought, oh, it's beyond me, it's not something I can do? Well, who else is going to do it? That's the thing. So just go for it.
Thank you. And talking now about your business going forward and what you're going to be in service of, just again, share with the audience in the next few years, what is it that you're going to be in service of? What is it that we can look forward to in terms of how you're going to make a difference? And how can people contact you if they want to collaborate with you in some way?
Okay, fantastic. So yeah, we're really trying to make a difference in the social media space. We just feel that a lot of social platforms are not really social. They're not really helping us to become more sociable. They're antisocial in many ways. And I've really been doing a lot of reflecting, especially over the past week, on how social media is affecting the young people. And I really want to move our mission just from a general mission to trying to reduce superficiality, isolation in the world. We're building a social app powered by voice. So our angle is using real voice to help build deeper flowing conversations. We're a community-based app, so communities have a lot of control in there and a lot of freedoms to the individual customer and communities. But I really want to move away from the general mission to maybe bringing that to young people in particular, because I've been reflecting on some of the statistics around mental health and suicide and how young girls in particular were affected when social media came out. If you look at the graphs of the rates of suicide, even preteen girls, the suicides have rocketed over 180% since social media came out. And it's just really shocking that even now, 10, 15 years after social media came out, we still don't have any better options for our young people in social media. They're still stuck with the kind of the Facebook, TikTok, Snapchat. And there isn't any kind of wholesome spaces where they can go and they can, WhatsApp is probably one of the better ones because you can have groups with friends and you can have support groups in there where you share voice notes and you share support with people that you're close to. But some of these other apps are quite unhealthy for young people, and they're not necessarily trying to focus on how do we make this a better experience for young people. But one thing we can do is we can take phones away from 13, 14 year olds. But then does that solve the problem? Because there's so much pressure for them to be on social media. And as humans, we're naturally born with this drive to be connected to people. And when, especially in the West, when you come home from school, you might feel isolated from your friends and everyone else is connected on these social platforms. There's huge pressure to be connected and to be involved and to be growing communities with your friends. And I feel like someone has got to try and build something better for our young people. So that's the angle at the moment that I really want to work on. Start the conversation going of what is wrong with social media at the moment. So many things to talk about. How can we build something better? And I want to involve the young people in that conversation. So if there's anyone out there that has children that are having that are experiencing problems with social media, I'd love to hear your stories. Love to get that conversation started on how we can go about improving it, because a lot of the time we might shy away. And previously I had this attitude, I thought, okay, we'll launch our app to the older people, because when you think about the young people, it's like, oh my gosh, there's so many things that could go wrong. It's like all the legal complications. But then if everyone has that attitude, no one is going to build anything better than TikTok or Snapchat. And that's the only option our young people have. And it's really terrible that they don't have anything more wholesome they can turn to. So that's kind of where I'm at the moment. But we're launching our app soon, and we're working on our go-to-market strategy, but it's in beta at the moment. And we would love to get wholesome, flowing conversations going in the app, a place where people can build deeper, authentic relationships and stronger communities in there, and hopefully build that sort of positive space where when you're in the app, you have support, you're coming off the app with a a better mental health than when you started, rather than some of these apps where you come off the app a bit drained. That is our goal, is that when you use our app, you feel like you've made a real authentic connection in there and it's added to your life. Yeah, that's our goal. So if you want to connect with me, you can connect on LinkedIn. It's probably where I'm most active at the moment, Laura Igwe. And I think I'm also on Twitter, but I don't use it that much anymore. Or email as well.
Super. And we will actually include your email as well on the actual show notes. And Laura, I've loved your energy today. I really appreciate you sharing your experiences with the audience out there. I know that many of them will have been inspired to reflect on their own leadership style, how they might make a different approach to not only leading themselves, but others in the future, and also connecting to their dreams. So Laura, thank you very much.
Thank you so much. It's been a great experience. The type of questions you have asked have really made me to stop and think and to work on my leadership style even more. So it's definitely challenged me as well. There's a few, as a new leader over the past, I mean, I led in corporate, but leading a startup company, there's even more responsibility because the people that you're working or employing with are more, you know, you're even more responsible. So, in the past 2 years, you know, I've made some mistakes as a leader, and it's good to take the time out to reflect on how to improve, and we're all working to grow as people and to grow as leaders. So thank you so much.
It's a pleasure. So I hope everyone out there enjoyed this episode of Confessions of a Successful Leader. You can find out more information about conscious leadership and self-coaching by just typing Andrew Talents into LinkedIn or your favorite browser. Until next time, don't forget to stay present, curious, and above all, conscious. Goodbye. I hope you enjoyed this episode of Confessions of a Successful Leader. You can access all previous episodes of the show at confessionsofasuccessfulleader.com. If you are interested in finding out more about conscious leadership and self-coaching, just type in Andrew Talents into LinkedIn or your favorite browser, and you'll find my contact details and all the content that you need. Until next time, don't forget to stay present, curious, and above all, conscious.
Thank you for enjoying this content by Billionaires in Boxes. If you would like to be a guest or a host, be sure to get in contact with us at billionairesinboxes.com.